Hey, everyone, welcome back. Today, we're taking a deep dive into photography lighting. You know, specifically this idea of subject-centric lighting.
Okay.
And we're using some great material from photographer Donald Giannotti's online workshop, Lighting Essentials.
Right.
Get ready, because we're going to break down how to control light and make any subject look exactly the way you want it to.
Yeah, it's fascinating how Giannotti approaches lighting. He doesn't just throw out techniques, you know?
Right.
He really wants you to understand the fundamentals first, like how light itself behaves.
Okay, so back to basics. I thought I knew a bit about lighting.
Yeah.
But Giannotti keeps saying light behaves consistently just like physics.
Mm.
He even uses this analogy of light as a liquid.
Okay.
Like a hose for direct light.
Uh-huh.
Mist for diffused light.
Mm.
That makes sense to you?
It totally does. Think about it. Water always flows downhill, right?
Right.
Light always travels in straight lines unless something bends or scatters it.
Yeah.
And that consistency is what makes it so predictable and controllable.
So if light's always acting the same way, why do photos look so different depending on the light? What's the secret sauce here?
That's where this presentation of light comes in, and it's kind of mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. We don't actually see light itself.
Okay.
We see what objects reflect back at us.
Okay.
That's what makes all the difference in photography.
Hold on. So even if I have the same exact light source, like the sun, what I see in my photo changes based on what that light hits.
Exactly. Let's say you're photographing an apple and a piece of tree bark.
Okay.
Same sunlight, but the smooth, shiny apple will reflect light differently than the rough bark, giving you totally different looks in your pictures.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So how do we start to control this presentation of light? Where do we even begin?
Giannotti breaks it down into what he calls the four pillars of lighting. And he's very clear that mastering all four is crucial.
Okay.
They're like the legs of a table, knock one out, and the whole thing collapses.
All right, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Let's hear about these pillars.
They are the size of the light source, its distance from the subject, the color of the light, and the angle of the light.
Okay.
Change any one of these, and you change the way light is presented by your subject.
Okay, that makes sense. But honestly, all four sound pretty important. If I had to pick one to focus on first,
right,
which one would you say is most crucial?
Trick question.
Oh.
That's what's so cool about Giannotti's approach. There's no hierarchy here. They all work together, constantly influencing each other.
All right. You're right. So let's break them down one by one. Then first up, size of the light source. We see this every day, right? A sunny day versus a cloudy day. The shadows look totally different.
You already understand it intuitively.
Yeah.
The sun is a tiny light source compared to us, so it creates hard to find shadows.
Mm.
Clouds act like a giant diffuser, spreading the light out and making those shadows soft and subtle.
So even though the sun's huge from our perspective down here, it's actually acting like a small light source.
Exactly. And yeah, it's the same in studio photography.
Okay.
A small bare flash will mimic that harsh sunlight. But use a giant softbox and suddenly you've got soft, diffuse light wrapping your subject like those clouds.
Okay, so size matters. What about distance? I know moving a light closer makes things brighter, but is there more to it than that?
There is. This is where the inverse square law comes in.
Okay.
Don't worry, it's not as scary as it sounds.
Okay.
Basically, light intensity drops off really fast as you move the source farther away.
Wait, so it's not a linear decrease, like double the distance, half the brightness?
Nope. It's way more dramatic than that.
Wow.
Double the distance, and the light is actually only one quarter as intense.
Mm-hmm.
This has huge implications for how you expose your photos and how your background is lit.
I can see how that would be important, especially if you're trying to balance your subject and the background just right. But how does knowing this law help me practically when I'm out shooting?
Well, think about this. Let's say you're shooting a portrait and the light starts to fade. If you understand the inverse square law, you know, you can move your subject slightly closer to the light source and compensate for that decrease in brightness, saving the shot without needing extra gear.
So it's like having a secret weapon against bad lighting. But to be honest, I still struggle with adjusting my camera settings when the light changes. You know, things like f-stops and shutter speed.
That's where understanding the relationship between those settings is key.
Okay.
Giannotti calls them reciprocals.
Mm.
Changing one affects the others. If you learn a few common combinations, it's like having a cheat sheet for different lighting conditions.
That's a great tip. I definitely need to brush up on those relationships. Okay, so we've covered size and distance. What's next?
Color temperature. This is where things get really interesting because light is never truly white.
Hmm.
It always has a color cast to it that affects the overall mood of your image.
Wait, so what we see as white light actually isn't, but our eyes don't usually pick that up right.
Exactly. Our brains are amazing at compensating for different color temperatures.
Yeah.
But cameras need a little help.
Okay.
Think about the difference between a photo taken under warm tungsten light versus cool daylight.
Right.
The feeling is completely different, even if you don't consciously notice the color shift.
Okay, so color temperature is like a secret mood setter in our photos. But how do we actually control it? Do we need to carry around different colored lights?
Not necessarily. You can use filters on your lens or adjust the white balance settings on your camera to compensate for different light sources. The key is to understand the impact of color temperature and use it to your advantage.
That makes sense. It's like choosing the right paint color for a room. It can totally change the vibe. All right, we've talked about size, distance, and color. What about angle of the light?
Angle is all about how the light hits your subject and how it bounces back to the camera.
Okay.
Remember that law of physics, angle of incidence equals angle of reflection.
Yeah, vaguely.
It's like playing pool, how the ball bounces off the cushion at the same angle it hit.
Okay, I remember that from science class.
Yeah.
But how does it actually play out in photography?
Think about those classic portrait lighting styles.
Okay.
Front lighting, side lighting, back lighting. They all create distinct looks and shadows based on where the light is coming from.
Right.
And that's just the start. You've also got top lighting, under lighting, and everything in between.
So it's not just about placing a light, it's about understanding how that light will interact with the subject based on the angle, right?
Exactly. And it's not just the angle of your main light source.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about what else is reflecting light in your scene.
Okay.
Walls, ceilings, even the clothes your subject is wearing.
Wow, there's so much more to this angle thing than I realized. So we've covered the four pillars now, but I have a feeling there's more to the story, right?
Yes,
Like,
definitely.
how do these pillars actually affect what we see in the final photo?
You're right, there's another layer to consider. It's not just about controlling the light, it's about understanding how your subject will present that light back to the camera. And that depends on the surface of your subject.
Okay, you're really piquing my curiosity now.
Oh.
How do different surfaces change the way light looks?
That's what we'll dive into next. Get ready, because we're about to uncover how textures and matte surfaces and even shiny surfaces affect the presentation of light and how you can use that knowledge to create some amazing effects in your photos.
Sounds good. All right, so we've covered the four pillars of lighting, but now I'm really curious about how the actual subject impacts things you mentioned, different surfaces.
Exactly. You can have the most perfectly controlled light in the world, but if you don't understand how your subject is going to reflect it, you're not going to get the look you want.
So it's not just about the light, it's about how the subject presents that light back to the camera.
Precisely. Think of it like this. You're the director, the light is your actor, but the subject is the costume.
Okay.
The same actor can look totally different depending on what they're wearing, right?
Okay, that's a great analogy.
Yeah.
So walk me through these different surfaces. What kind of costumes are we dealing with here?
Giannotti breaks it down into three main types: textured, matte, and shiny.
Okay.
Each one interacts with light in its own unique way, and knowing how to work with them is key to getting the results you want.
Let's start with textured surfaces then. What comes to mind when you think of texture in photography?
Anything with a lot of unevenness. Think about a rough piece of wood, a woven basket, a rocky landscape. All those bumps and grooves create shadows and highlights that give the subject depth and dimension.
So how do we use light to bring out those textures? Is it all about side lighting?
Side lighting is definitely a go-to for emphasizing texture because it creates strong shadows that really highlight the unevenness. Top lighting can work well too, especially if you want to create a more dramatic, chiseled look.
What about front lighting? I feel like that would just flatten everything out, right?
You're right. Front lighting tends to minimize texture because the light is coming from the same direction as the camera, so there are fewer shadows to define those bumps and grooves.
Oh, that makes sense. It's like the difference between seeing a mountain range at sunrise versus at noon.
Yeah.
The side light at sunrise really makes those peaks and valleys pop.
Exactly. It's all about how the light sculpts the subject. Now let's move on to matte surfaces. These are smoother than textured surfaces, but they're not shiny.
Okay, so what are some examples of matte surfaces?
Think skin fabric, unfinished wood. These surfaces diffuse light more evenly, creating softer shadows and a less dramatic look overall.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all ties back to those four pillars we talked about earlier.
Right.
Like, if I want soft shadows on a matte surface, I'd probably choose a larger light source and maybe move it a bit closer.
Right, you got it. And you probably avoid strong side lighting because that would create more defined shadows than you want.
Mm.
It's all about understanding how those factors work together to create the desired effect.
It's like a puzzle where each piece influences the others.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got textured and matte. What about shiny surfaces? Those seem like they could be tricky.
Shiny surfaces are definitely the most challenging because they're all about reflection.
Nope.
Think mirrors, chrome polished metal even eyes. When you're photographing a shiny surface, you're not just lighting the object itself, you're controlling what it reflects.
That's a really interesting way to think about it. So it's almost like you're lighting the environment around the object because that's what's going to be reflected back at the camera.
Exactly. You have to be super aware of everything in the surrounding area and how it might create unwanted reflections.
So it's all about strategic placement of things like flags and reflectors to control those reflections, right?
Precisely. You might use black flags to block unwanted reflections or white reflectors to bounce light back into specific areas. Mm-hmm. It's a delicate dance of manipulating light and shadow.
I've definitely struggled with reflections in my photos before. It's like you're fighting against the laws of physics.
It can be tricky, but that's part of the challenge and the fun. And Giannotti actually gives a great example of how we deal with reflections in everyday life makeup.
Makeup.
Think about it. When a makeup artist powders someone's face, they're essentially reducing shine, which is reducing reflection.
Oh.
It's a simple way to control how the skin presents the light.
Wow. I never thought about it like that. It's amazing how these principles are all around us. We just have to learn to see them.
Huh.
Okay, so we've talked about textured matte and shiny surfaces, but how do we actually put this knowledge into practice?
Mm.
How do we control the light and create the look we want?
That's where Giannotti's concept of the five areas of light presentation comes in. It sounds technical, but it's actually a really helpful way to break down how light behaves on any subject.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
What are these five magical areas?
They are true subject value, specular highlight, specular transition, shadow transition, and shadow.
Wow, that's a mouthful. Can you break those down a bit more?
Of course. True subject value is basically what the subject looks like without any highlights or shadows, like its base color.
Hmm.
Specular highlight is the brightest point of reflection, like the catchlight in someone's eye or the sparkle on a piece of jewelry. Specular transition is the area where that highlight fades into the true subject value.
Uh-huh.
Shadow transition is where the true subject value fades into the shadow. And finally, shadow is the area that's not directly lit.
So it's like a gradient from the brightest point to the darkest point with different areas of transition in between.
Exactly. And each of those five areas is influenced by the size, distance, color, and angle of your light source, as well as the properties of your subject's surface.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all ties together.
Yeah.
But it's a lot to keep in mind. Is there a simple way to remember how to use these five areas to create different looks?
Giannotti provides some great visual examples in his workshop showing how these five areas are presented in different photographs. He breaks down a portrait showing how the specular highlights on the skin are soft and diffused, while the specular highlights on the jewelry are sharp and defined. It all comes down to how those different materials interact with the light.
That's a fantastic illustration. It shows how the same light source can create totally different effects depending on what it hits. So by understanding these five areas and how they're affected by the four pillars, we can really start to fine-tune the look of our photos, right?
Absolutely. You're essentially becoming a sculptor of light using these principles to shape and mold the way your subject is presented to the viewer.
This is starting to make a lot of sense. But before we get too carried away, I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a lot of information.
Yeah.
For someone just starting out, it can feel pretty overwhelming.
You're right. It's a lot to digest. But the beauty of it is that you don't need to master everything overnight. Start with the basics, experiment with one pillar at a time, and observe how it affects your images.
Mm-hmm.
As you gain experience, you'll start to see how these concepts interact and how you can use them to create the looks you want.
So it's a journey, not a destination.
Exactly. And the best part about this journey is that it's filled with endless possibilities for creativity.
I love that. Okay, so we've laid the groundwork. We've talked about the four pillars, the different surfaces, and the five areas of light presentation. But how do we actually put all of this into practice?
Mm-hmm.
What are some techniques we can use to make this subject-centric approach work for us?
That's what we'll explore next. Get ready to dive into Giannotti's practical tips and tricks for mastering the art of subject-centric lighting.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground on this deep dive into subject-centric lighting.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the four pillars, different surface types, and those five areas of light presentation.
Right.
Now, how do we actually use all this to improve our photography?
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Okay.
Giannotti doesn't just leave you with theory. He gives some really practical exercises to train your eye and build your skills.
Give me an example, because I'm ready to put this into practice.
Remember how we talked about front lighting, side lighting, back lighting, and top lighting?
Yeah.
He suggests taking one simple subject, maybe a shoe or a piece of fruit.
Okay.
And photographing it under each of those conditions.
That's a great idea.
Hmm.
I could really see how the light shapes the object differently depending on where it's coming from.
Exactly. You'll start to notice how side lighting emphasizes texture.
Right.
How backlighting can create a halo effect. And how front lighting can sometimes look flat once you've done that with artificial light. Try it with natural light throughout the day.
So it's about building that visual library in your mind of how light interacts with different forms.
Absolutely. And as you do this, pay attention to the transitions between highlights and shadows.
Okay.
Do they blend smoothly or are they abrupt? How does that affect the overall mood of the image?
This is making me think about light in a totally different way. I usually just set up my lights and hope for the best.
And that's fine when you're starting out, but this approach gives you so much more control. It's like the difference between throwing ingredients together and actually following a recipe.
So what are some other recipes Giannotti provides for controlling light?
One crucial concept is understanding light ratios, which is the relationship between the brightness of your main light and your fill light.
Light ratios. I've heard that term before, but never really understood what it meant.
Think of it like this. Your main light is the star of the show,
okay,
illuminating your subject and creating the primary shadows.
Mm.
Your fill light is the supporting actor,
mm-hmm,
softening those shadows and controlling the overall contrast.
Okay, so the ratio is basically how much brighter the main light is compared to the fill light.
Exactly. A high ratio where your main light is much stronger than your fill creates dramatic shadows and a more sculpted look, which can be great for emphasizing texture or creating a moody atmosphere.
Mm.
A lower ratio with less difference in brightness gives you softer shadows and a more even look, which is often flattering for portraits.
That's interesting. So I can actually use light ratios to create different moods and styles in my photos.
You absolutely can. And the best part is you don't need fancy equipment to do it. Giannotti shows how to use a simple white card as a fill light. It's all about understanding the principle and being resourceful.
I love that. It's like he's demystifying this whole lighting thing and making it accessible to everyone.
That's the beauty of his approach. It's not about expensive gear. It's about understanding how light works and using that knowledge to create the images you envision.
So besides light ratios, what are some other techniques we can use to put this subject-centric approach into practice?
Giannotti provides specific guidance for different types of photography.
Okay.
For portraits, he talks about how to light skin in a flattering way,
minimizing
blemishes and wrinkles while still maintaining a natural look.
I've always struggled with portrait lighting. It seems like there's so much pressure to get it right.
There is, but Giannotti breaks it down in a way that makes it manageable. He stresses the importance of observing how light naturally falls on the face and using that as a starting point.
So it's not about creating some artificial perfect lighting. It's about enhancing what's already there.
Mm, exactly. And he gives tips on how to use different light modifiers like soft boxes and reflectors to shape the light and create the desired effect.
Okay.
He also talks about using catch lights in the eyes to add life and sparkle to a portrait.
Catch lights are those little reflections of the light source in the eyes, right?
Yep. They can make a huge difference in a portrait, adding dimension and making the subject look more engaged.
Okay, that's a good tip. What about still life photography? How does this approach apply there?
Giannotti shows how to use light to highlight the texture and form of objects. He encourages you to think about the direction of the light and how it will interact with different surfaces.
So even with still life, it's not just about placing the object and taking a picture. It's about consciously shaping the light to reveal its beauty.
Exactly. And he gives examples of how to use different light sources and modifiers to create different moods and styles. For example, hard light can be great for emphasizing texture, while soft light can create a more delicate and ethereal feel.
This is making me want to go out and experiment with all these techniques. What about product photography? That seems like it would require a lot of precision.
It does, and Giannotti gives some great advice on how to control reflections, which is a major challenge with product photography. He talks about using flags and black cards to block out unwanted reflections and using white cards to bounce light back into specific areas.
So it's like you're creating a mini studio environment, carefully controlling every aspect of the light.
Exactly, and he emphasizes the importance of consistency, especially if you're shooting multiple products for a catalog or website.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of how light works and how I can use it to improve my photography.
And that's what's so exciting about Giannotti's approach. It's not just about memorizing techniques. It's about developing a deeper understanding of light and using that knowledge to unlock your creativity.
So to wrap things up, what's the one key takeaway our listeners should remember from this deep dive into subject-centric lighting?
I think the most important thing is to remember that light behaves consistently. It follows the laws of physics. The magic happens when you understand how your subject presents that light and then use that knowledge to create the images you want.
It's about taking control, being deliberate, and seeing the world through the eyes of a light sculptor.
Exactly. And as you practice and experiment, you'll discover endless possibilities for using light to tell your stories and capture the beauty around you.
This has been an incredible deep dive into the world of subject-centric lighting. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and insights.
It's been my pleasure.
And to all our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this journey and feel inspired to go out and experiment with these principles in your own photography. Until next time, keep exploring the magic of light.